The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Florence Nash from Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the New York Times, Money Magazine, maybe the AARP Bulletin, depending on time. And our programming today is generously underwritten by Salibi Chiropractic. Salibi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. And now this is from a Sunday special section of the New York Times Sunday paper for March 4, which has had some interesting articles on retirement. This one is on adaptations. You can't be afraid of the tech. Drawing on their own experience, older adults are making new technology work for them in a variety of second careers. This is by John Honk. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, computer and information technology jobs are expected to grow 13% in the coming decade, faster than the average for all occupations. That's good news for your grandchildren. If you are an older adult thinking of making a second career in the high-tech heart of the new economy, however, be prepared to face skepticism as to whether you can even turn on a computer, much less master the latest software. There are a lot of barriers to older workers moving into that industry, says the psychologist Neil Charnas of Florida State University, who has studied issues related to aging and technology use for two decades. Pervasive stereotypes about older workers, he said, include the perception among employers and even among many older adults themselves that they are not tech savvy and that they can't learn new things. Not true. Although aging brains might take a little longer to learn new tech skills, Dr. Charnas says, they can still do it. Some older adults are proving his assertion not only in mainstream high-tech careers, but also in tech-enabled positions. These are jobs, often part-time or done remotely with flexible schedules, that do not require an advanced degree in computer science or years of experience, but do involve some digital proficiency. That's an important distinction, said Sarah Sutton Fell, chief executive and founder of FlexJobs, an online service specializing in remote and flexible employment. These are really viable professional opportunities, especially for retirees. Following are older adults who have found second careers in jobs in which technology is the common thread, drawing on their backgrounds and experience to flourish in rapidly changing industries. The virtual assistant. In 2004, when Jerry Lafferty accepted a severance package from E-Trade Financial rather than relocate, she wanted a job that gave her more flexibility. I stumbled on the idea of virtual assistant, says Ms. Lafferty, now 67, who lives in San Francisco. A new field at the time, this involves working remotely to help small, typically one-person businesses, solopreneurs, as she calls them, with their administrative and marketing operations. Ms. Lafferty figured her new job would involve doing most of the things she used to do as an executive assistant in marketing. She was wrong about that. I had to learn a lot of technology, she said. Her business now thrives. She keeps up with the changes, said one client, Lisa Tenner, a writing coach based in Saunderstown, Rhode Island, who has worked with Ms. Lafferty since 2009. Ms. Tenner said her virtual assistant had mastered a very complicated and often consuming customer relationship management platform to help her marketing efforts. I'm almost helpless with it myself, she said. Ms. Rafferty, who took webinars and tutorials to learn the latest digital tools of her trade, dismisses the idea that the job is beyond the grasp of her cohort. You can't be afraid of the tech, she said. That's what I've learned. You really can't break the computer by pushing the wrong button. The program manager. At Manufacturers Hanover Bank in the early 1980s, Ann Donnelly was a management trainee involved in the rollout of what was then a groundbreaking new technology, ATMs. When the bank merged with Chemical and later Chase, Ms. Donovan ended up becoming a higher-level program manager involved in many tech-driven initiatives. She left the corporate world at about 10 years ago and eventually took a part-time job at a Barnes & Noble bookstore in Manhasset on Long Island. Ostensibly a cashier, she has recently been lending her expertise to the store's management, looking at ways to improve efficiency during peak sales times. Right now, she says, this work, which inevitably involves technology, is on a small scale and informal. She's fine with the situation. I certainly don't need to run big programs like I did in the past, says Ms. Donnelly, now 64 and living in Bayside, Queens. I'd be more interested in helping introduce some younger people to the concept of program management. Program managers have been defined as super project managers focused on the strategy and accomplishment of major organizational initiatives. Although the technology has changed, she said that some of what she experienced as a young manager in a giant financial institution still applies. There's a way to manage projects and programs that will always be usable regardless of technology, she said. You have to live that to learn that. The Code Wrangler. When he was in his 30s, Earl Fong, a San Francisco resident, returned to school to earn a graduate degree in computer science. For the next decade, he worked for software companies on the West Coast before shifting to volunteer and nonprofit work. Among other jobs, he taught basic computer skills for 3 years in Tanzania. Now back in San Francisco and working as a software developer for the nonprofit Kiva Microfunds, Mr. Fong, now 67, prides himself on being a code wrangler, someone who is adept with all kinds of software code. He may be decades older than many of his fellow wranglers, but Mr. Fong says they all face a similar challenge when it comes to staying relevant. Anybody in tech has to be constantly in learning mode, he said. The Transcriptionist. Marcy Brown, 65, retired from a career as a paralegal to become a gray nomad with her husband touring the country in an RV. While on the road, Ms. Brown, an Indiana native, started a new career as a transcriptionist. It was typing depositions, and I'd been in a law office, so I knew the format, she said. Ms. Brown was not daunted that she would need to become fluent in a professional transcription program to do the job remotely. Her business eventually expanded beyond the courts, and she now transcribes everything from oral histories to college lectures. Although she and her husband sold the RV and now live in what she calls a sticks-and-bricks home in Gravoy Mills, Missouri, she continues to doing her transcription work and has expanded her digital competencies. For one recent legal project, she had to put audio timestamps on portions of the transcription that were inaudible. This required another advanced program that she mastered. For one recent legal project, she had to put audio timestamps on portions of the transcription that were inaudible. This required another advanced program that she mastered. Yet she is modest about her tech skills. I posted a video on Facebook the other day that I made out of photos and music, and someone said, "You are so smart," she said. I said, "No, it's mostly trial and error." The web developer. William Jones, 55, started his computer career in the 1980s, working in mainframes for a credit card company in his native Birmingham, England. In 2005, he and his wife Kimberly made a radical lifestyle change for themselves and their four children. They bought a 76-acre farm in rural Virginia, where they raised free-range pigs. When his children grew older, they range in age from 18 to 24, Mr. Jones decided to return to the tech world. He took an online web development course at the Flatiron School in Manhattan. I thought technically I could pick it up, he said, but I didn't think many employers would be interested in someone in their mid-50s. After completing the 8-month Flatiron course last year, he found a job in web development for D'Artagnan, a food company based in New Jersey. Mr. Jones compares the coding he's doing in his new position and the mainframe code he used to write to learning German and Italian. Italian, like today's computer languages, being less formal and rule-bound. Regardless of experience, he thinks many older adults are capable of learning the skills needed for his job. Intellectually, he said, there's no reason someone my age couldn't be doing this. Now from Money Magazine, they have a section in the December issue called The Future of Shopping. Blame the internet, blame Amazon, blame your smartphone. The way you shop has been altered forever. But those places you used to go and buy things, don't count them out just yet. So the first article in this section is called Meet the New Faces of Retail. Customer service is evolving for the better. Can it save the retail industry? When you walk into the Madison Avenue Bonobos, don't expect to walk out with anything. Sure, you can try on a pair of pants or about a dozen different gingham work shirts, but when you pick your favorite, there's no cashier to ring up your purchase, no line to stand in, nor shopping bags to haul it home. Instead, Joshua Jones, you call him Josh, swipes your card on his iPad and offers you a bottle of Perrier for the road. If you're not in a rush, he'll help you rank Jessica Alba movies or chat about your upcoming vacation. Within a few days, your clothes will arrive at home, shipped from a warehouse in Massachusetts. Josh isn't a sales associate. He's what the upstart menswear company deems a guide. He knows the intricacies of menswear intimately, style, fit, comfort, and has a client book of regulars who trust his taste. On a recent weekday afternoon, he convinced Phil, a new customer, to try on a pair of olive trousers he ended up buying. After Phil rushed out the door to make a business meeting, Josh made a mental note to follow up with him by email to make sure there's no buyer's remorse. I make it easy for them, Josh says. People say all the time, I hate shopping. You made this enjoyable. Josh doesn't work on commission. When he hands you that sparkling water, remembers your kid's name, or waves to you through the store window, it feels sincere. At past retail jobs, employers encouraged him to upsell constantly and to adhere to strict styling guidelines. Here, things are a little different. Bonobos is a newcomer to the brick-and-mortar game and is betting on a new trend called experience shopping, a catch-all term that has come to define physical spaces that seek an emotional connection with their customers and a relationship that goes beyond a fitting room handoff and debit card swipe. As industry giants move their operations online, shuttering stores and shedding thousands of employees, Bonobos and other brands that offer experience shopping are taking the opposite approach. The company started as an e-commerce men's pants store in 2007 and branched into physical spaces 5 years later, adding suits, dress shirts, and other clothes that cost about the same as those at any retailer that targets the upper middle class. But while a dress shirt at Bonobos will run you about $98, just like a shirt at J. Crew, the retail climate for those two brands has been radically different. This year, as J. Crew, loaded with debt, announced closings and staff layoffs, Bonobos announced a string of new stores. Today, there are 44 physical guide shops in the U.S. and about 300 guides. For Josh, this job isn't just a paycheck or a placeholder for more meaningful work. At 25 years old, he wants to manage his own brand one day. When he first interviewed at Bonobos, the general manager who hired him asked about his 5-year plan. I was kind of shocked, Josh recalls. And then he said, I want to help you get there. Josh's story might seem a little strange. 8 years after the recession, charismatic college graduates aren't supposed to be working in retail. And they're definitely not supposed to like working in retail. And yet, as these jobs teeter on the brink of what pundits have dubbed the retail apocalypse, Josh and a fleet of new energetic employees are taking up the fight. Together, they're challenging everything you think you know about shopping. It's no secret that the rise of e-commerce has left a stain on traditional retail. In the past year alone, a laundry list of once thriving shopping mall staples like Payless, Toys R Us, and Wet Seal have filed for bankruptcy. Other iconic brands that shaped fashion in the 90s and aughts, like American Apparel and The Limited, have shut down in-store operations for good. Brick-and-mortar jobs are also disappearing. In the first 9 months of 2017, layoffs at department stores like Macy's and JCPenney led to the loss of more than 70,000 jobs, according to the outplacement firm Challenger Gray and Christmas. Delivery from Amazon Prime can now fetch your coffee beans, tampons, dog treats, printer ink, Ziploc bags, daily vitamins, and tube socks in a matter of days, if not hours, and can be scheduled on a self-reliant loop. If you live in a major metropolitan area, Fresh Direct, Boxed, and Seamless will gladly handle your grocery, toiletry, and takeout needs. And companies like Netflix and Spotify provide endless on-demand entertainment. So why would you stand in an exceedingly long line, spar with a quick-tempered cashier, or wander aimlessly around a megastore if you no longer have to? For physical retailers, it's not enough to have things anymore, experts say. Now you need an experience, a convenience, activity, or ambiance to rope people in. There's been a lot of fear that retail is on the decline, said Andrew Chamberlain, Glassdoor's chief economist. What's happening instead is a shift. People are still going into the brick-and-mortar stores that feel good to be in, and where you can expect to find a person to help you navigate a complicated product space. Retailers that are thriving, Chamberlain says, have learned the not-so-secret formula for winning over an audience spoiled for choice. A strong e-commerce presence to snag online sales, paired with an in-store experience to keep them coming back. You may have noticed what's called the omni-channel strategy trickling into the places you already shop. Sportswear giants Adidas and Nike have recently unveiled massive immersive retail experiences with basketball courts, treadmills, and soccer practice zones. Outdoor activewear brand REI has outfitted stores with rock climbing walls and has added mobile offerings like hiking trail apps and instructional videos for the gear it sells. Last year, as competitors' sales dipped, REI announced record revenues. At Sephora, a makeup behemoth that has long embraced experience shopping, stores function like massive test labs where customers, clients, try on hundreds of makeup and skincare brands, and consultants or cast members mosey around to demonstrate as needed. Employees don't need a ton of beauty expertise to work at Sephora, but they do need some digital fluency, enough to school customers in its expanding range of digital tools. We know the lines are blurring, says Carolyn Smith, Senior Vice President of Human Resources at Sephora. We're embracing every way the client wants to interact with us and equipping our cast members in the store to be a part of that. Most important, Smith says, Sephora's employees need to be emotionally intelligent and know how to create a human experience in this increasingly digital space. For new entrants to the retail space, baking experience shopping into a business plan is a no-brainer. Many of them, like clothing retailer Everlane and prescription glasses company Warby Parker, opened physical locations after growing a customer base online first. Their physical stores share a renewed faith in that warm and fuzzy, the customer is always right mentality that mom and pop figured out ages ago. And they're making sure every hire you interact with reflects that. Roles are changing, says Jane Greenthal, a senior design strategist focused on the retail industry at the design and consulting firm Gensler. It's a different skill set. Employees aren't just there to stock merchandise. They're building relationships. If ghost malls and empty parking lots point to a tragic end for apparel retail, Rent the Runway exists in a parallel universe. In its New York City flagship store, color-coded formal wear and airy fitting rooms fill 6,000 square feet of prime Manhattan real estate. On a recent weekday afternoon, it was buzzing with activity. This is nothing, says 26-year-old Luisa Orozco, one of four store managers. Before it opened at 9 a.m., there was a line of about a dozen women waiting to get in, she says. You should have seen it at lunchtime. Rent the Runway is an omnichannel pioneer. The company launched in 2009 as an online destination for designer dress rentals and branched into physical stores in 2013. In 2016, it added a subscription service that lets customers rent a rotating closet of designer clothes for $139 a month. And in October, it introduced a new tier that lets them rent four pieces for $89 a month. For all its Pinterest-perfect accoutrements, blush-pink accents, jewelry arranged like artifacts, the shop is surprisingly comfortable. Staff and customers chat like girlfriends in a beauty salon or at a neighborhood bar. For special occasions, they meet with stylists in private appointment rooms, mingling with other maids of honor, job seekers, and prom dates-to-be. It's kind of like Cheers, says CEO Jennifer Hyman. Everybody knows your name. Hyman likens Rent the Runway's brick-and-mortar outpost to many community centers. At the San Francisco location, regulars use the store as a co-working space, dropping by in the morning and huddling around marble communal tables for hours, she says. From a hiring perspective, that's an important distinction. You can't fake community with apathetic college students. So when the company hires, it looks for applicants who have worked intimately with customers in the past, usually in hospitality roles at hotel concierge desks, fine restaurants, and cult favorite fitness studios like SoulCycle. Rent the Runway also looks for employees who are gifted conversationalists, judicious, and patient. Compared with other brands, employee turnover is low. The majority of managers have been with their stores since they opened, including the entire managerial team in Washington, D.C., Hyman says. Orozco, who worked as a celebrity stylist before joining Rent the Runway, has been with the company for 4 years, a year longer than the average retail employee stays at her job, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. She's already got more responsibility than managers in similar posts, helping the executive team suss out which marketing, sales, and service strategies work for New York customers. She even draws career maps for the stylists who work in her store. On all levels, experienced shopping venues tend to pay better than traditional retail stores. At Bonobos, employees like Josh, experienced non-managers or lead guides, make an average of $17 an hour, and new guides make an average of $15 an hour, according to a company spokeswoman. Benefits, too, are abundant. Bonobos offers nearly unlimited vacation, maternity, and paternity leave, and an annual team-building retreat for full-time employees. Glassdoor data shows that the average wage for entry-level sales associates at other experienced stores like Warby Parker is about the same as Bonobos. Compared with Glassdoor estimates for stores like Gap, $10 an hour, and Macy's, $9 an hour, the BLS national average for sales associates, $12 an hour, it's clear these brands are willing to pay a premium for talent. They have to be a good listener, a good problem solver, Glassdoor's Chamberlain says. Skills that go beyond scanning an item, that's definitely valuable today. Brick-and-mortar retail has been moving in this direction for years. When was the last time you saw an empty seat at Apple's Genius Bar or a deserted Trader Joe's checkout line? Like any industry shift, there are growing pains. Rent the Runway tried an accessories-focused subscription service that never left beta. The company also went through staff shakeups and lost several of its executives. It became profitable in 2016. Sustainability is another constant concern for the omnichannel. Companies with e-commerce origins may be better equipped to compete with Amazon than traditional brands, but there's no guarantee the retail behemoth won't scoop up their customers anyway. Amazon already has its sights set on the fashion industry. Prime Wardrobe, a subscription clothing service, is currently in the works. But perhaps the biggest tell is coming to Walmart. In the past 2 years, America's largest private employer, long plagued by a bad customer service reputation and consistent reports of low wages, has spent $2.7 billion on training programs designed to improve how employees interact with customers. It has also raised wages. The average pay for non-managerial full-time employees is now $13.85, up 17% from 3 years ago. The human touch becomes a competitive differentiator, says Walmart spokesman Ravi Jariwala. Over the past year, Walmart has doubled down on the experience philosophy. This spring, the company tapped Rent the Runway co-founder Jenny Fleiss to oversee a tech startup it's calling Code 8, a project from a Walmart-backed tech incubator rumored to revolve around highly personalized shopping. A few months later, Walmart announced it had acquired Bonobos and named its CEO, Andy Dunn, Senior Vice President of Digital Consumer Brands. For longtime Bonobos customers, the Walmart buyout was predictably contentious. Josh, though, isn't stressed. He suspects the merger will only lead to more personal career growth. Plus, he's got too much going on to think about that right now, like that follow-up email to Phil. Now, also from Money Magazine, his a brief article called "Go Ahead, Press the Snooze Button. Waking up early doesn't necessarily make you more productive. Here's what will," by Kristen Baller. You've heard the stories. Apple CEO Tim Cook wakes up at 3:45 every morning. Both Vogue's Anna Wintour and Twitter's Jack Dorsey have alarms that go off before 6 a.m. Ernest Hemingway and Margaret Thatcher never slept in. Maybe that's all true, but showing the world our best, most productive selves may have little to do with the time we wake up or go to bed. According to a growing body of research, what really counts is doing both consistently. A study from Brigham and Women's Hospital tracked the sleep patterns of 61 full-time students at Harvard College for 30 days and compared their academic performance. The students all got about the same amount of sleep, but those with irregular bed and wake-up times fared worse than those who stuck to the same sleep routine. Our results indicate that going to sleep and waking up at approximately the same time is as important as the number of hours one sleeps, lead author Andrew J.K. Phillips, a biophysicist at Brigham and Women's Hospital, says in a statement. The findings are the latest in a string of research claiming that a good night's sleep isn't just getting 7 to 9 hours of shut-eye, it's also about getting the same 7 to 9 hours every night. This spring, researchers at Baylor University ran a similar case study on the nighttime routines of young adults and found that the more variable their sleep schedule was, the worse they performed throughout the week. Our circadian rhythm, or body clock, regulates melatonin, the hormone that helps us fall and stay asleep. A fluctuating sleep pattern screws up that body clock, which in turn screws us up too. Sleep is a part of a larger system of biological rhythms that regulate everything from brain function to muscle repair, says Michael Grandner, director of the Sleep and Health Research Program at the University of Arizona. The more variable your sleep schedule, the more these systems are not working optimally together. The actual hours you sleep are up to you. Everyone has her own biological night, a personalized time frame when the body wants to go to bed, Grandner says. So if early to bed, early to rise feels more like a punishment than a personal philosophy, committing to a regular sleep schedule is a smarter bet than trying to fake it as a morning person. The key is finding your own rhythm. And now we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. I hope you'll listen next time. I'm Florence Nash, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And we are generously underwritten by Salibi Chiropractic. Salibi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long till next time.